Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin this week. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Pretty good. We've got a special guest this week. We've got Stephen Foskett from, I guess, Gestalt IT and Tech Field Day. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. Good to be here with you guys.
I would imagine pretty much anybody who listens to a podcast like this that's related to storage would know who you are, because you are the Willy Wonka of storage. When it comes to events, you are the Willy Wonka storage. Everybody would know who you are. You put on great events. You get people to fly in from all around the world, put them in front of vendors, and just talk about technology. So you have a great job.
It is a pretty great job, I have to say. I'm not complaining, and it lets me, spend time with folks like yourselves. It's been too long, Martin, but I also get to, see a lot of, great technology, meet a lot of folks in the industry and see what's happening in the industry. And that's always very exciting to nerds like me.
And Field Day's become a brand, hasn't it, really? Because didn't you start off with Storage Field Day, and then it seems to have expanded into many aspects of computing now?
Well, it's funny. I intentionally didn't start off with Storage Field Day. I started off with Tech Field Day because I knew that if I started with storage, then I'd never do anything but storage, because storage is awesome and, other stuff, well, not so much. So I intentionally didn't start with Storage Field Day. And then we added Networking Field Day and Mobility or Wireless Field Day and so on, a Virtualization Field Day before we added Storage Field Day, because I wanted to make sure that we had, more breadth of companies and so on. Because otherwise, why would I do anything else?
Yeah, true.
So you've just led us into the discussion of this week, and that is the whole point of enterprise storage being really good. Now, the reason we went for this title is because Keith Townsend, good friend of ours, did a little bit of his CTO advisor, CTO DOS video a couple of weeks ago, and he titled it Enterprise Storage is Boring. And of course, we all disagreed with that, although that wasn't necessarily what he was trying to imply. But we disagree with that because we think that there's something really interesting in enterprise storage coming around the corner all the time. And from my perspective, I've certainly seen that in all the Tech Field Day events and the Storage Field Day events I've been part of. So, Stephen, just give us your view. Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think there is so much going on in storage all the time?
Well, probably the most realistic answer to that is that, frankly, there's new technology advances happening, and the industry is hungry for those. Storage is made up of capacity, latency, throughput, power, space, all these different requirements, and people are trying to answer those in different ways, essentially because storage just isn't good enough as it stands today. And so people are making all these technological advances all the time, trying to figure out ways of doing storage better. I think that's driven a continuing, force of innovation across each of these different areas that causes new companies to come from these technology advances.
I'd like to wind back a bit, Stephen. What do you mean storage isn't good enough?
Well, it's not. I always like to joke with people when they say, oh, storage, what's there to talk about? It's quite simple. If I ask them, well, is your computer fast enough? And do you have enough storage? And no one would ever claim, oh yeah, I got plenty of storage and it's just fine. I mean, I don't worry about storage performance. Everybody complains, no matter what computer you're using, whether you've got an iPhone or a big data center computer, it's not fast enough. There's not enough storage. It's not reliable enough. It's et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Storage isn't good enough.
It's because it's a multi-axis problem. You have capacity and you have performance, and they don't scale linearly. So I think that's one of the reasons why storage still is interesting. With a CPU, people are generally just worried about it's fast enough. They don't worry about whether it's got enough capacity to store stuff.
Well, there's performance, but capacity is important too. I mean, Chris and I were just talking about just the tremendous advances in capacity and capacity per dollar or per pound or whatever you guys use these days. It's not fixed. That's not a done problem. And yeah, performance is a problem too. But in many ways, performance is better than capacity at this point.
So let's just talk about that capacity thing, just to give everybody a little bit of context. So I just happen to have on my desk here a number of SanDisk 32 gig micro SD cards, which are, and I'm just measuring it, pretty much exactly the same size as my thumbnail. People always use that as a measurement, and it is literally exactly the same size as my thumbnail. And it's 32 gig, and it must weigh literally less than a gram. And you think for £5, $7, $8, you can store more than we could have dreamt of 20 years ago.
And isn't that remarkable? I mean, my first computer had a 20 megabyte hard drive, my first home computer. Nowadays, my digital camera takes 25 megabyte photos.
There you go. So capacity is definitely an important one. Performance is definitely an important one. I agree. And I see what Martin's saying, that in some respects, as you said, Martin, multi-axis problem, you know, you've got different things that you're trying to solve at different times. But technology seems to come to us from the storage perspective, seems to come in waves. It doesn't seem that we see innovations in all of these things all of the time.
Exactly. You know, it seems that, you know, those waves might be caused by technology advances. They might also be caused by disparities in investment from, you know, both in terms of finances and effort. And maybe they're just caused by inevitable technology and you know, mathematics and so on. You know, we've learned to do things. And as Martin said as well, we've got the multi-access question as well. I mean, you know, when you're especially when you get outside of a single device, that's been a big challenge too. How do you make storage big? And not just big in terms of capacity, but big in terms of access.
But that whole multi-access thing is one of the key things in storage for us on economic models and everything, because if you want it fast, it'll be expensive. Your IOPS will be expensive, but if you want it big, you're paying for per terabyte. So you've got that multi-access economic issue. So I was trying to allude to, so with CPU, you don't tier CPU, or most people don't tier CPU. But in storage, we talk about tiering all the time, making sure the data lives at the right level of either performance or capacity.
That's an interesting thought. Is that because there are inevitable trade-offs in storage that we just don't see on the CPU side?
I think so. I think there are inevitable trade-offs at the moment. I think we would all like one medium, one storage tier to rule them, but economically that's not viable. I think everyone would love to see it on the, you'd love to stick all your data on the fastest possible storage if it was economically sensible to do so.
Okay, I'm going to go off on a slight tangent, Martin. I think we do tier with processors a little bit, because we allow them to go into turbo mode, or we allow them to run slower so that they run cooler. So I think we do it in some respects, but we don't do it in the same degree as we do with storage. And you're right. I think if we could have the fastest possible thing, we probably would.
Yeah.
So Stephen, from your perspective, if you look at the companies you've seen come and go over the last, 9 years of Tech Field Days? Is it nine now?
I'm afraid it's getting on to be nine.
Gosh, and we won't go into the fact that I was there at the first one, because that would just make me feel really old. But the companies you've seen, they must have come in waves. You know, for instance, the all-flash wave. Everybody suddenly had an all-flash offering, for example.
Yeah, and indeed, it's funny because people always ask me if, you know, storage, that's a storage field day, that's such a broad term. Like, what is storage? That's intentional. And then you know, companies will say, well, what's the theme of this event? Intentionally, we have no theme, but there always is a theme because things go in waves. And so certainly, you know, you were at all-flash array field day. I remember hybrid array field day. You know, I remember VMware integration field day. You know, we've recently had NVMe over Fabrics field day. And it seems that there's always these, you know, object storage field day, always these trends in the industry and multiple companies working on roughly the same thing in different ways. And that's one thing that keeps me excited about storage.
So here's an interesting angle. So obviously, you know, 9 years worth of seeing different companies come and go, different things like all-flash arrays and so on. I would say that typically when we see a company come to the market, they're probably 3 or 4 years in development. Some things seem to take a long time, but I have a feeling some things take a lot longer than that. And we don't see certain things in development, like some of the media side of things, for maybe up to 9 or 10 years ahead of when they're first discussed.
Indeed. I will just throw a little shout out there. One of my favorite industry things is the Storage Developer Conference. And the reason I love it so much is because you do get to see these, you know, sort of strange storage mathematics people with their strange storage math ideas and storage concepts presenting papers at that event. And then years down the road, you'll see these things start happening. You know, of course, typically not in the way that they expected them to. It really does take a long time for some of this stuff to get to market. And I think that that's as it should be. I'll just throw that out there. I personally feel that storage is hard enough to do right that it takes years of development before, you know, something is usable.
Storage is not boring. We want it to be interesting. We'd prefer it not to be exciting.
Yeah, exactly. We would love it if it was boring, but unfortunately, sometimes it's not.
So those sort of developments, you look at some of the things in, say, the development of Flash or Optane or the solid state media or anything like that. That all seems to me to be being done at a much greater level of detail than, say, some of the other components out there, like networking or processors, that just seem to evolve more than have radical leaps. And I wonder whether that's just my own internal bias or whether that's really true.
It's your internal bias.
Okay.
I think one thing that causes trouble for storage, and again, we see this with the different, you know, with the different verticals that I'm looking at with Field Day, storage has to be, you know, it's the final resting place of data. And so storage has a very important job to do. On the networking side, you know, some data loss is tolerable. Sometimes disruption is tolerable. Loss of connectivity is sometimes even tolerable. You'd think, you know, networking is, you know, you got one job, connectivity, but that's not always true. And so I think that there's more of a tolerance of new ideas and new concepts just because, you know, that job one of never losing data just isn't there.
Yeah, so you can imagine a business surviving losing its network for a period of time. You can imagine a business losing its compute capacity for a short period of time. You can't imagine a business ever recovering from losing its data.
Exactly. In fact, we've seen businesses fail from losing their data. And that's what I'd like to get back to as well. Whenever I'm looking at new storage companies, new storage technologies, I always try to remind myself that storage really only has one requirement. If I put data in, it has to come back out exactly the same on demand. Everything else is a feature. You know, everything else is optional. And that's why, you know, when you see some of these new concepts in storage, you know, they give me the willies because I'm just not sure that, you know, it may be able to do all these other things, but I'm not sure it can do job one, which is give me my data back when I ask for it.
I think we've seen it in the past. I mean, we think we've seen attempts to do strange and wonderful things with the data, and it fails because you don't get back what you wanted or wasn't what you put there in the first place. I think we've seen a couple of startups try that in the past.
You remember Ocarina? That's what they were doing, right? Yeah. Yeah. They would give you back roughly what you wanted.
Yeah, I remember that presentation. It was fascinating from a science perspective side. There's some great you know, the guys presenting were great too. But I remember the conversation they said, we'll always keep a copy of the original as well. So I could never work out what the point of compressing something to that degree was if you wouldn't throw away the original because you're still keeping two copies. What did Dell use that technology for eventually? I don't know.
Didn't it go into like file something? They had a in-house file system that they were working on.
If anybody's listening to to our conversation, please feel free to comment, tweet us, tell us what on earth Dell did with Ocarina when they bought it. That'd be really good to know.
You got some good people from it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if you look at, actually, that's an interesting point, actually, that you know, we should perhaps talk about. And that's the fact that you see lots of people coming back into the industry time and time again, doing new technology or doing an improved version of their previous solution. So for instance, Gautam Rao, who was at Ocarina, I think is now doing Portworks as the CTO. But we see that with lots of people. They come back time and time again to do the next best thing in storage.
As Stephen says, it's one of the more interesting areas. It's not done. So there is an iteration every time as you look at it and think, oh, I could do that better. I mean, even from an end user point of view, you're always looking at your storage environment thinking, oh, I could do that better this time.
You know, it's funny. Another thing that always gets me about seeing these new storage companies is, you know, basically there's two kinds of people that start storage companies. There's storage veterans who say, I last time wasn't quite right, and this time I'm going to do it better. I've got these ideas, and I'm, you know, basically the people who really know storage. And then you've got storage neophytes who come in from a different field, networking or compute or, you know, scalable applications or something. And they'll come in and they'll say, it's storage, which could be so hard, but I've got this concept and this concept could be used in storage. And it's so funny because, you know, the former often are not thinking new ideas. You know, a lot of the time they're, you know, kind of coming up with incremental ideas over what they've done before. Whereas the latter are coming in with radical reinventions of storage, but sometimes they're so radical that, frankly, they're terrible ideas. I would love to see a startup founded by someone who knows nothing about storage and someone who knows everything about storage coming together to do storage.
I would say that one person who you could pick as a good example of that is Moshe Anai with Symmetrix, and his reinvention is XIV and reinvention is Infinidat. They're all fairly similar in the sense that they are enterprise storage products that deliver the similar sets of functionality. But at each step of the process, he's found a way to do something different and offer something different within those platforms and be successful in selling them.
And each time it's better, or at least more suited, you know, more thought out.
Ah, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe the fact that it isn't necessarily better. Maybe it's more appropriate to what we need at the time.
Yeah, more appropriate to the time. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And maybe that's the reflection of why you can continuously come back to the market with storage products time and time again, is because the requirements are changing so dramatically that it's very easy to come back with a product that does something better than the one did 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think we see paradigm shifts and shifts fairly regularly in the storage industry, where it feels a lot less small iterations. Somebody turns up with something different, and often, obviously, there is something in the air, which means that everybody turns up with the same product at the same time. It's very unusual to see somebody turn up with something particularly unique, but it just takes you aback. It's like, oh, okay, that's different. How do I use that? Is that appropriate for where I am? I think that's the interesting bit of storage as a platform, is the platform changes an awful lot over time.
Now, when you say the platform, Martin, do you mean hardware platform? Do you mean software platform? Do you mean both?
Both. So we begin to see the idea of SDS, but I would argue SDS has probably been around for longer than most people realize. But some of the drivers for that are hardware.
Okay, explain what you mean.
I think storage and software really comes to its own with the increasing amount of flash. I think that's driven it quite hard, certainly localized flash as well. So people are thinking, okay, so how do I use this? So we end up with these distributed storage systems, which are almost inevitably a software layer on top of an existing operating system. So I think that's what we've seen. It's that hardware. And as high-performance hardware becomes commoditized, storage developers are thinking about, how do I utilize this?
Could we put a case there for storage going through a cycle that says the hardware improves, the software exploits it, the software then drives the next level of hardware innovation that says we need something better from the hardware, and we keep seeing some sort of leapfrogging process?
I think we see a layering. I think one of the things we find, it's relatively unusual for a storage technology to go away completely. So we introduce new technologies, but we don't very often see the old ones go away. They may iterate, they may improve, but we keep adding new paradigms, new technologies into our data centers or our storage environments.
So yeah, Martin, I see what you mean. And you can look at it and say that we've got, I don't know, we've got tape still in the data center. We haven't got things like mass storage subsystem. When I was in the Computer History Museum just a couple of weeks ago, I went around the storage section and they've got the most weird and wacky stuff. And if anybody's never seen it, mass storage subsystem is like a little cartridge that looks like a cylindrical canister. And you must remember it, Martin, and I'm sure you've got one somewhere, Stephen. But effectively, for anybody who hasn't seen that, it was a rack like a honeycomb of cartridges, and a robot went and picked one out and it unraveled it, a very early sort of tape drive. Thank goodness we don't, well, I don't know, but I haven't seen one of those for a long time. So I saw some technology disappears out.
Oh, obviously punch cards and paper tape is gone. Well, I hope.
Now, Howard's got punch tape. I'm sure. Yeah. Punch cards and Howard. I'm sure he's got everything. He's still got everything. And so he's got it.
All right. Okay.
I often have that discussion with people who don't know much about the data center. They're usually surprised, shocked even, to find that tape is still in use. But of course, tape is just phenomenally important, even in modern data centers.
Tape, from a capacity point of view, is pretty much an unbeatable device. And if you just look at the technology behind it, it's obvious that tape capacities can continue to increase for a long time. The density on a magnetic tape is nowhere near, for instance, the density on a hard disk. They've got a long way to go if they really want to. The only thing is, the individual tapes, Stephen, is the failure domain of an individual tape. If your tape snaps or gets chewed up, you've lost many terabytes of data these days.
Yeah, indeed. And that is one of the ironies, isn't it? That you're using tape for backup and archiving. It becomes absolutely critical. And yet the physical system itself is very difficult to move. You know, it ends up being something, you know, this big boat anchor on site. You know, you can protect it. But on the other hand, at least the tape cartridges themselves are fairly easy to move out once they're used. You know, you can, you know, ship them out. They're reliable. They're, you know, you don't have to keep powering them. They're lightweight. You know, they're certainly small volume-wise compared to the capacity they hold.
And they're so power efficient.
Indeed, yeah. There's not a lot that's more power efficient than a tape cartridge in a box.
Oh, I'm sure you've watched the Microsoft Azure presentation. They've got some storage device which seem to be going back down the made route.
A lot of people are going back down the made route. We just heard from Dropbox as well. And of course, then there's also those made SSDs.
That's right, yeah. The 100 terabyte drives look like they are probably doing something like a maid type thing where they're switching off some of the silicon in order to keep the power consumption low.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting.
So we've talked a lot about the technology. We've very much talked about media, devices, all the rest of it. What about storage from the management perspective and how that's changing or how that's moving on from an interest perspective? Because I would say we don't see many companies that are talking about the management of the storage as much as the technology, perhaps.
It's because it's rubbish. It's still universally generally awful. It's the one thing which has never really progressed beyond spreadsheet for a lot of people.
So do you think that's an area of innovation where we've just not gone anywhere then? What do you think, Steve?
Well, certainly we've spent a lot of time and effort going there. I mean, there have been companies focused on storage management as long as there's been storage. It does seem like we've not gotten anywhere, though. And maybe that's not a storage problem. I mean, how's your unified storage management? How's your single pane of glass treating you these days?
You can almost do it within a hyper-converged or pseudo-hyper-converged systems where everything's just managed through a single pane. So a lot of vSphere admins will say, well, they've got the storage management problem solved. It's all just done through vSphere, through the plugins. But if you've got a more heterogeneous environment where you're trying to do different things, yeah, the problem's not solved.
So is that the one area, do you think, that actually people might get investment for in the future? So, you know, people obviously are still getting investment to build storage appliances, and they have to be quite unique with that. And media continues to grow because the vendors are still driving that cost, capacity, performance curve all the time. But do you think that's an area where potentially there might be an opportunity for significant innovation, that data management, data mobility / storage management side?
Well, I think that's it's a huge challenge. I think people in the storage industry recognize that. People even outside the storage industry, but within IT, probably recognize that. But again, it's so seldom been addressed effectively. Certainly, like I said, a lot of companies, a lot of technologies, a lot of people have spent time trying to address storage management, data movement, data management, you know, and often those products end up being swallowed up by a big storage capacity company that then lets them wither.
I think it's very difficult to build a business on. I think it's very difficult at the moment to get anybody to pay enough money for a storage management product to make it a viable business.
It's too bad, because that's probably more important than just where do you stuff the bits. Maybe it's like one of these hardware software questions. You know, I mean, you know, it's very difficult to make money. I don't want to, this, of course, this is going to sound insane because so many companies have done it, but it's fairly difficult to make money on a software only product unless you can strike the right OEM bundling, you know, kind of deals, or, well, unless you're Oracle. But so many companies, when they come up with software, they end up having software plus hardware because it's a way to make money. It's a way to make, you know, sizable revenue instead of, you know, off of software. Could it be that? Could it be just as simple as, you know, selling atoms looks better to the investors, and so we have a lot of companies selling atoms instead of fits?
So we have to put in storage appliances that do management appliances.
There you go.
Yes. We've sold it. I think that's what they sold on Silicon Valley, wasn't it? Basically, storage appliances that did encryption. So that maybe they were so prescient. Yeah, they were well ahead of us. It was a box.
Yep.
What about the technologies that don't seem to have gone anywhere over the last 15, 20 years, or even 10 years? I'll give an example. HP always, at every single event I've ever gone to, have always talked about memristors and how that was going to revolutionize everything. What else can we think of that have just always been there but never quite made it?
We've got Racetrack from IBM. It's never seemed to go anywhere as far as I can see. Optical keeps popping its head up every now and then.
Holographic.
Yeah, yep. Holographic.
Bubble. Now, you know, bubble memory.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we're going to have, was it genome or DNA or encoding things on biological.
And to be honest, Martin, that to use your term for something that on a previous podcast, that's just bollocks. That's never going to happen, is it? We're not going to store our data in the next, I don't know how long, on DNA.
I like the fact that you might be able to have a proper virus.
Yeah, that is true. You could have something that modifies your data at the virus level, yeah. But I don't see it.
Yeah, I like the suggestion on that note that, you know, people are talking about that researchers managed to store a computer virus on DNA storage. And then, of course, all the coverage of that was running to exactly what you said, that your computer is catching a cold.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see how that will be practical enough in the short term. And the reason I think that it's not likely to be practical is because, like some of the technologies that you've mentioned, Martin, like the memristor side of things, so much of the stuff is driven by economics. So I remember Jim Handy telling us on one of the podcasts we did at the beginning of the year, or even the end of last year, he was saying that some of those other technologies never come to market because things like NAND flash as a storage medium keeps reducing in price and increasing in capacity. So it sort of basically masks the ability for those other technologies to come into the market because they can never be cost effective enough.
Yeah, they're always a day late and a dollar short, aren't they? And that's the challenge for 3D XPoint. It's a challenge for memristors and all these other things. I mean, that's what stopped holographic storage from taking off, because, you know, conventional technology was just good enough.
The new technology has to be so much better. So, I mean, hard drives weren't good enough, but it took an awful long time, and it's still taking quite a long time for them to be replaced by flash. And we keep making hard drives better as well.
And then there's also the production problem that, you know, we just don't have production capacity to replace all the hard drives with NAND or all the tape with hard drives or, you know, whatever. You know, it's just not possible to make that much stuff.
I wonder how much of that is true and how much of it is to do with the fact that there's a lot of people bought into technology that they don't want to change. And when you've got a big investment in the persistent side of your business, as in the data, the last thing you want to do is be swapping that out, you know, at the drop of a hat. Swapping out the networking or putting in a server with a faster CPU is relatively easy compared to saying, you know what, we're going to take that petabyte of data and we're going to stick it somewhere else, because you've been heavily invested into that in the first place.
Well, you're back to data as gravity. So moving, it's difficult.
Moving, it's going to be always difficult, right?
Yeah.
That's another area where we've underinvested. We briefly touched on it a minute ago, but that data mobility side, that ability to really be able to leverage or leverage, depending on how you choose to pronounce it, that data mobility capability to say, I can move my data around much really efficiently. I can move it under different technology and so on. And I think that means that people tend to hang on to their investment a lot longer potentially than they may do in some other areas of IT.
Yeah, we don't tend to move data between storage devices that much. So we do leverage the capability within an array and we'll move stuff within a device. But moving it externally, the data mobility tools certainly aren't easy to use, are not very standard. You find yourself very rapidly locked into a single vendor, even for data mobility.
Certainly, many companies have promised multi-vendor, multi-cloud now is the new thing. But unless you have a standard protocol that lets you do everything, that just doesn't work. But of course, you know, we're starting to see that perhaps with object storage and, you know, cloud storage protocol like S3, perhaps it is possible to have multi-cloud. Perhaps it is possible to have multi-vendor data mobility.
So, Stephen, in the 9 years or so of running Field Days, have you got any better at spotting those companies which are going to be successful, who are really going to make it? And what do you think makes them stand out?
I think I have. And the answer isn't all that satisfying to me as a technologist. In many cases, I found myself unduly impressed by a company mainly based on the people and not so much plus or minus on the technology. In other words, I'll go in and sometimes the technology is good and sometimes the technology is not. But if I see that it's a company of really A players, like people, you know, people with real credibility who know what they're doing, you know, diversity of thought, I feel that this is somebody to watch. You know, one that springs to mind is Pure Storage. Right from the very beginning, I said, wow, this is a really impressive group of people that are doing really interesting things in an exciting way. And I was not at all surprised to see them grow to the extent that they have. Whereas other times, you know, I'll walk in and I'll just have this sense that I don't think this is going anywhere. And a lot of the time, it's not the technology, it's the people.
I'd agree. And from my experience of being an attendee, I'd say exactly the same, that there are some people you walk in and you think, you haven't presented this right. I'm not going to name names, but there've been a few. I don't want to be, you know, I could name names. I could very happily name them, but I won't do it.
If I had a dollar for all the times that I've wished I could just stop the presentation and give it myself.
Yeah, exactly. And you know the ones we've been there together and that's actually happened. And I looked at it and I remember thinking, this technology might be good, it might not be good, I'm not really sure. But I'm having to work really hard to understand what message they're trying to give to me and the reason they're trying to sell this product to me. And sometimes I've gone away and it's been a few weeks later, you got the light bulb moment where you go, yeah, I get it. But other times you never get it. And you think, if they just found a better way to communicate the message, perhaps I would have understood it better. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it would have sold in the market better.
Perhaps yeah. We need the other fellow on the podcast then.
Do we have somebody else on? Is that Chris Miller?
Well, Chris would be excellent at doing this sort of stuff. But I was thinking about the other fellow who seems to have his long-running flu or cold or something.
Yeah, permission problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get him back in and he can tell us how we should sell it properly.
Yeah.
Okay. So one other piece of technology I think we should touch on, which I think could be very interesting to understand how it might be affected by storage and how storage might drive it, and that's the idea of quantum computing. I have no idea how data is managed in a quantum computer. Do either of you know?
No.
We need to get somebody on to talk about it, Chris.
That just seems to be like, you know, they talk about the compute side of it, but I never hear anything about how they get the data in and out to do the compute. And that just seems to me like that must be a huge problem.
Yeah, I think we need to get somebody to come in and come to a podcast and talk about it. So if there's any people or anybody listening to the podcast who knows a lot about quantum computing and how data management, data handling is done within a quantum computer environment, I think we'd love to talk to you.
Absolutely. Give us a shout. That'll be really worth doing. That was really interesting. Some great stuff we've talked about there. Where do you think we're going to go in the future? Do you think it's just going to be more of the same? Do you think storage is going to just keep on trucking?
I do think that it's going to continue roughly in the trajectory that it is. Tiering, as Martin mentioned, new technologies coming in waves and crashing upon the sands of the established systems, some of that stuff kind of breaking through and rising up to the top. One thing that I'll say is this sort of storage class memory concept, I think, could potentially be incredibly disruptive if it actually happens. You know, you look at HP's The Machine, or if you look at, what Intel is talking about with the non-storage applications of 3D XPoint, that's pretty exciting, but it's too soon to say whether that's really going to affect computing as a whole.
So, Stephen, in case there's even possibly one person out there in podcast listening land who has no idea who you are, how can they find you to follow up on some of our discussions that we have today, find out more about Tech Field Day, even get involved, perhaps, because I know you're always looking for people?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. So, again, I'm Stephen Foskett. You can find me as S. Foskett on pretty much every platform that exists. I like to register that one as quick as I can. Thankfully, there aren't a lot of Foskets to compete with, but there you have it. And the best way to get a hold of me is just, go to techfieldday.com. If you're interested in becoming a delegate, there's a delegates toolbar. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, there's a sponsors one. Also, check out Gestalt IT. We're publishing articles and coverage there every day. And there's some good stuff and some fun stuff and sometimes some good fun stuff.
Okay, Stephen, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a really interesting conversation. Hopefully we can get you on again in the future and, you know, maybe in another 9 years' time, talk about where the storage industry is and reflect back over the last 18 years' worth of Tech Field Day. Don't forget, everybody, you can find us online at storageunpacked.com. You can find us at Storage Unpacked on Twitter if you want to respond to any of those comments we've just mentioned during the podcast. And of course, you can find us on LinkedIn in our LinkedIn group, which you can find just through searching Storage Unpacked. So guys, thanks again and catch up with you all soon.